of the Augusta Festival. It's in the park in downtown Elkins, West Virginia. And this is August, what is it? What is today, the 8th?
August
8th. 1992. And we're going to talk first to a former director named Michael Mazzolini. Steve. Can you say my name is?
What's that?
My name is?
My name is?
And then say what your name is.
My name is Michael Mazzolini.
And just sit normally, I'll move the microphone.
Okay.
Nice meeting you. What's your name?
This is Anna Maria Mazzolini, the latest addition to the Mazzolini family.
Oh, right. She's adorable.
Yeah.
When was she born?
She's a year and 2 months. She was born June of 91.
Fantastic. And
So I have two families. I'm a recycled dad.
A recycled dad?
Yeah, that's what I am.
When did that start? When did you come to Elkins?
I came to Elkins in June of 1974. I moved here to become the director of the Valley School, and that's my first experience with Elkins. I mean, not with Elkins, but with the Augusta Workshop.
How was the Valley School related to the Augusta?
They weren't directly related, but the early Valley School, I guess you'd say crowd or extended family was involved in both. I think that's the best way to say it. Mutual participation type thing.
Can you describe your impressions of Augusta when you first became acquainted with it?
Augusta was pretty Spartan. There wasn't a whole lot going on, you know. As far as the number of people we're dealing with here is like immensely more. Uh-huh. Immensely more. In the very beginning it was well, not very large, I guess is the best way to say it. Small, very small.
Was it located on the campus? Tell me about what.
Yeah, actually they weren't in the campus center or strewn about campus like they are now. It was actually held in what was at one time the outdoor fitness center equipment building. It was a blue structure that sat down below where the new library is right now. It's been demolished since the new library.
And so that was the central location of it?
Yeah, that was the central hub, that just at one little building, right.
Wow.
The pottery was over, I think, in the campus center at that time, and the music classes were in the campus center, but now, you know, they occupy literally every building during the summer in some form or another.
So who was there, and what were they doing? What were they teaching? What do you remember?
Well, Paul Reisler was there at the Instrument Construction Workshop, and he was responsible for bringing in the musical acts and the musical entertainment at the time. And there was a raccoon firing pit against the side of the hill there, and that had usually a big crowd of late-night rebel rousers, and of course, Olive Goodenwooden was there in the weaving. At that time, I think Willetta Hinkle was also involved with the Augusta Workshop in quite an extensive manner. At that time, the Randolph County Creative Arts Council operated the Augusta Workshop. Later, the college would take over the running of the Augusta Workshop. Mm-hmm. Probably about when you got here, right? In 78?
Yeah, I guess.
77? I'm not sure.
No,
when.
It was a little later than that, actually.
Uh-huh.
80, maybe. So, can you describe the spirit of it, or what people, the vision of it, what people thought they were doing, or?
Well, I think the vision has always been sort of the same, to provide a taste of the traditional arts, you know, here in the modern era, you know, in this age of computer fax, electronic, hysteria, maybe might be the best way to describe it. It's nice to just go back to some of the roots, you know, some of the roots which were typical of this region at that time, and I think still probably true too. A lot of the people, I guess the participants, are mostly transient types who don't live in this region really, and who come here for this experience. It would be a nice place.
people.
Well, name a few more names for us here.
A few more names. Early Augusta. Jim Scotty Weiss, I didn't mention them. They were involved. Boy, we're going way back. Noel Craddock, he was a banjo player, was also a teacher at the college. He was involved somehow. Francis Fisher, and I can't remember Francis's spouse's name. We're going way back here, you know, 20 years. or 18 years, anyhow. Francis Fisher. That's about all I can think of right now.
Did you take classes? Did you become a student of Augusta yourself?
When I first got here, no. And then later, I worked 2 years for Augusta.
Tell me about that.
Well, I guess the title was publicity director. At that time, that meant everything from writing news releases to moving pianos. it's true. That's why I have to laugh at this badge here. You see, it says publicity director. Didn't have piano mover under there anywhere. But you know, whatever needed to be done, I had a truck, and if you needed to move it, we moved it, and that type of thing. Augusta, again, when I was working for Augusta, was never as large as it is right now, and so the massive operation that's going on now is, you know, it's a little more well coordinated as far as getting everything done. You know, more workforce.
Basically. Here's some of the.
But I did take a class at one time, too.
Uh-huh. Which was?
I took a beginning banjo class, and John McCutcheon was the instructor, and Jerry Milnes, and I'm drawing a blank. Used to be a fiddle player in one of the early Paul Reisler bands. Curly-haired guy. Excellent fiddle player. I can't remember his name. He was one of the instructors.
Not Paul Yeaton?
No, it was after Paul. Paul was a local here, you know, at the time, and when I got here, that's how I met Paul. Paul Yeaton, by the time I was working for Augusta, Paul Yeaton had moved out of Elkins. Stewart, fiddle player, Stewart.
That was when John McCutcheon was pretty...
he was here every year.
Pretty hard to restrain, wasn't he? I mean...
Oh,
Tell me some...
John McCutcheon stories?
Yes.
Some late Ice House capers. Now, John always did his partying and his socializing in a discreet fashion. He would let it hang out in class and things, but I think on the social level, he did things behind closed doors, you know. Of course, he was the great heartthrob, you know, before he got married. This was the anti-marriage days of his life. Everybody wanted John, you know.
Uh-huh. Must be nice. You know, I heard one of the college administrators here tell some outrageous stories about
John.
Yeah, and by way of saying that the college didn't want that sort of thing going on at the
he bent the rules somewhat. Yeah, you might say that.
And
you really want this down for a fact?
Well, not if it's going to
incriminate
involve any law violations.
Oh, you know, just kind of minuscule things like giving his meal pass to another traveling musician or things of that nature. His extra room key to somebody else. You know, things of that type. A lot of times in the early Augusta years, I don't think that hardly anyone was paid very much. So even the college way of housing people here and taking care of their needs as far as room, board, shelter, and things wasn't quite as sophisticated as it has gotten. So I could see him lending a pass to a friend traveling through who, you know, might make $50 for the weekend.
This is before they had electronic meal tickets, you mean?
Yeah. Right. Cafeteria.
And badges.
Yeah, right. ID numbers.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
So John, but he was a good
John was pretty notorious, yes. In and out of the classroom.
Uh-huh.
His legend preceded him wherever he went, you know. And he was in charge of the pretty much of the whole musical makeup of the, especially the traditional week and the old time week. Maybe somewhat even in the well, bluegrass came later, I think. But
were there old timers who came to his concert?
Oh, yeah, as musicians. I mean, to perform,
local,
to sit
like
in.
The Hammonds, did they come at that time? Or
the Hammonds came and...
tell me about that.
Well, vague, gray area, you know? Can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I
didn't get to sit in classes too often because I was working there, so, you know, I was moving around a lot. Good bit.
Tell me a Paul Reiser story then.
Well, I remember the time that Paul broke his toe when we dropped his saw on his foot. We moved it in my truck out of his house, and we moved it back to the campus center because he was in the Dulcimer construction workshop, you know. He was the head instructor, so he didn't get his foot out of the way, and we set her down right on his toe, and we broke it. That's like a fractured fairy tale. So he limped around through Augusta, so he couldn't keep up with John that Augusta.
But ordinarily?
He kept abreast, yeah.
What do you remember about Olive? Did you follow that?
Well, I remember Olive from the arts aspect. I think Olive is what Augusta embodies totally. I mean, you know, coming down there from the homestead area of the lower part of the county there and having weaved for what appears to have been a century and a half anyhow, you know. I think she's just recently retired from here, a couple years ago. We're talking long bloodline there, long relationship with Augusta, you know. I mean, Olive is the weaving program. Everything since her is probably in tribute still to her, you know. A good woman. She didn't get rankled too easily if things didn't go her way right away. She had patience to wait things out, certain situations. From a work aspect, because I worked there, so working with people, you see things differently than if you're a student or if you're just traveling through or, you know, a part-time participant. Am I going all right here?
You're doing great.
I'm just trying to answer your questions as you fire them.
Yeah.
We're getting out of my era here pretty soon, though. My last association with Augusta, though, would be as a student after I'd worked there, and I took the beginning banjo class, and I was the worst one. I didn't even know how to tune it. But after a couple weeks, I came out with one song I could play, which was quite an accomplishment. And everybody else was a little bit above me going in, and now my repertoire is up to around 9 or 10. Yeah, you never. Well, I'm not very good. I have like 10 thumbs, but I can pluck out a few tunes. And I learned at Augusta, so...
And what was the first one?
First song I learned was the first song that probably everybody learns in the beginning banjo class, which is Angeline the Baker, you know? Not a whole lot of notes involved there, you know? Not too much margin there once you get the system down. But, and John was my teacher, and everybody was patient. I was a beginner, literally. And I was in my young 30s, probably at the age where you think that you're too old to learn something new like that. So for me, it was quite an accomplishment because I don't really have a good ear. You know, I can't take my banjo out and pick up a tune right now. But if I ever had the free time during the summers now to go back and take the beginner's class again, I think I could progress because I have a little foundation to work off of, you know. When I went in the last time, I was cold. And I was, everybody was real patient with me, and particularly Angel Chiango? What's her last name? Angel, the dulcimer player from Philadelphia? Chiango, yeah. She was in that class, too. And it was a fun class. She was a student in that class. Now she's an instructor. Has been for years, yeah.
Uh-huh. I guess there's a good bit of that kind of continuity of students becoming instructors. And
Right, yeah. The Dance Week band, they've come through. And well, a lot of people have done that, though. Haven't you? More or less? You were an instructor?
I was never a student at Augusta.
Yeah, okay.
In the sense of a paying student. How are you doing? I learned as much as everybody else did going along. But, yeah. Anything else we should talk about?
Well, probably the most vivid, if Augusta were to end like today, if this was the last one ever, if I had one vivid memory, it would be of old Mr. Martin, of Martin Bogan and Armstrong, sitting out front of Hallihurst at sunrise, having been up all night and played all night, and just as young and joyous as you would ever imagine, you know? And he clearly had to be in his mid-80s then, I would think.
That may have been his last year here.
I believe it was. I believe it was his last year here. I think he
passed. I have a recording of him playing in the Ice House.
Right. Oh, do you? Yeah.
On the guitar, which was unusual for him.
Right.
He was a mandolin player.
Uh-huh. That's true. Yeah. Then you have a collector's item.
Well, I think the archive here has it too. But.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you very much. If you think of anything else, come back and see us.
Okay, I'll do that. Thanks.
Can you say my name is Gene Ross?
My name is Gene Ross.
Uh-huh. And tell me a little bit about your history here in Elkins, just when you came. Why?
I didn't realize I was going to be talking about myself. Well, to make it brief, my husband had finished his graduate work at Harvard in 49, except for writing his thesis, and he looked for a job and found one at Davis and Elkins College, and we came here in 49 and have lived here ever since.
You said you came in 49.
Mm-hmm. And we reared two children. And when our older son went, our son, he's older than the daughter, went to college, my work was diminished at home, and so there was an opening in the newly formed senior center for a crafts director. And I applied and took the part-time position when it was offered to me. And I was there from 67 through summer of 70, and then my husband had a sabbatical. We were gone for a year, but when I came back, the directorship was open and they gave that to me. So then I stayed at the senior center, and I was there from 71 until 85, summer of 85. And I remember when I was the first craft coordinator they had, and so it was my fun and privilege to find the craftspeople who would be able to teach classes. And though I had known these people in one kind of a way, in sort of social situations, when I began to work with them, I got to know them even better. And some of them were, well, still are. Olive Goodwin was one of the ones we had early on. Candace Laird, another.
Tell me about Candace.
Candace was a native Randolph Countyan, and her family must have been very unusual because I knew two of them. I knew her and her brother Pete, and then there was a third one who was in the Marines and played in the band. They were all talented. Candace picked up this the craft of basketry, and I don't know where she learned it initially, but she had been making baskets since she was young, and was skilled, and early on went to Cedar Lakes in Ripley to teach and had apprentices there. She had never written instructions down for how to make the baskets that she specialized in, and she was one of the first instructors here at Augusta, and as a result of that, and help she had here, she did put her instructions down in writing, and so that still survives. I don't think it was made into a book, but mimeograph is better than blank page. Her brother Pete was interesting too. He was a teacher up in Beverly and a great scientist, natural scientist, just knew everything about everything. Very interesting family, talented. And Sadavia Godden, sister of Willetta Hinkle, was the very first person we acquired as a volunteer instructor. And Davy stayed at the senior center clear through 85 when I retired. She was there for the whole 14, well, counting the 3 years I was in the craft area, all 17 years I was at the senior center. But then she became ill and had to give that up.
It sounds as though that program, that crafts program, was kind of identifying, encouraging local people who would later become some of the old masters at Augusta.
Yes, that is true, and that's why we became involved. As a matter of fact, I'm of the opinion, other people may disagree with me, but I think the idea of Augusta was born in the craft area at the senior center, because Davy Godden and Dorothy Cromwell had attended a meeting in Petersburg of arts and crafts people, and there was a speaker there from the state. I believe it must have been the Department of Culture and History, and he made the statement in his remarks, it was too bad that somebody did not attempt to get the old artisans who knew the crafts to have an opportunity to teach those to the next generation or two so that we could preserve them. And those two ladies came back to the craft area, and I very distinctly recall our sitting at a table talking about this. Dorothy Cromwell's husband was on the board at the college, and so she was acquainted with it. My husband was on the faculty. And so I made arrangements with the college to have a meeting. And I remember that we also included the superintendent of schools. Jason Meadows was there, the evening meeting. And Evan Kendall, who was in charge of development for the college at that time, was there. Margaret Godden was there. And I took Davy Godden and Bernice Kaufman, who's another weaver, of quite a bit of skill. Well, skilled. There's no modification necessary for that. And they were all responsive to the idea. At that time, I didn't feel that I could do anything more than be supportive in the way of providing teachers, helping to make connections that way. And the public schools apparently were not exactly in a position to do anything about it, but supportive too of the idea. And so it was the college and Nevin Kendall and Margaret Godden who managed to put together what funding was necessary for that initial beginning. And Willetta Hinkle, as I say, Davy Godden's sister, who was teaching art in Ohio, came. She was one of the first instructors, as was Olive Goodwin, who was another senior, and Candace Laird. Those three were related more or less to the senior center.
I hadn't realized all those connections.
Well, other people saw the beginning from other approaches, and so I'm not
a pivotal meeting.
I do, but I wouldn't quarrel with anybody if somebody else has another idea. Well, I know that
we
much.
We don't want to get into any controversy.
No, I would like that in the record, though. I that did transpire.
And well, what was the consensus of the meeting then?
Well, you've been in enough of them to know that when you hit the money problem, why then people begin to have their doubts. The idea was very provocative. They all responded with enthusiasm to the idea. And enough so that people took the action that was needed. It was a very small beginning. Well, now, I can't tell you that much about the, because I was busy with my job in town, and I helped get some scholarships. I remember Marie Galuli had one. She was a sweet little maiden lady who didn't have any family, and the senior center really became her life, and she was one of the ones who came up and participated in that and got a lot out of it.
Do you remember what she did, though? Did she take a class?
Marie was interested in copper enameling, and she did some of that at the senior center, and she also wrote poetry, and I don't know whether those courses were available or not, but she was into whatever. She was willing to try. Hmm. Had been a seamstress in the days when she was working before she retired. Hmm. Or quit. I don't know that person ever quit retires from sewing.
What do you recall about where the early funding, where did Margaret and...
You'll have to ask her.
Yeah.
I would not be specific. I couldn't be specific about
and
that.
And do you recall who the first director was then?
She was the first director. Mm-hmm.
What was the early response of the community, do you think, to the program?
Well, I think the community was...
We're talking 73, summer of 73.
Is that when it started? Well, then I was the director of the senior center. I was wrong about that. I thought it was earlier than that.
72. Well, it was 72. This is the 20th anniversary, so I guess it was...
Yes, well, you see, then I'd only been back a year, and I was pretty busy trying to get on my feet and get everything rolling the way we wanted it to go. But I remember when I was in the senior center, walking down the streets and hearing people would say to me, I can't wait till I retire so I can come to the senior center and take some of these classes. And up till that time, classes in basketry and pottery and knitting, crocheting, the very basic kinds of things, but those classes weren't available. And so well, we even had some chair caning and weaving. The Reverend George Rector, father of the doctor, Dr. Robert Rector, had learned how to cane chairs somewhere along the line. Presbyterian minister, it was kind of a avocation. Did beautiful work. And I think they wanted him to teach at Augusta, but he just didn't feel that he was up to that. He was 90-some when he died, so... But my point is that people were interested, but there really wasn't any place to go. And the fact that Augusta has flourished, so I think indicates that there was a need. Furthermore, one of the local stores, Sue Pfeiffer's store, offers these classes now all through the year. The sewing center. All kinds of things. Mostly with the needles.
Needlework.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot to do there.
Wait, if Augusta keeps growing at the rate it has been, where do you see all this?
Oh my goodness, I don't know. It's just amazing. Don't you find it incredible?
I haven't been here for several years myself, and I'm blown away by it. I was just noticing the quality of the crafts. It's breathtaking.
We helped out too one time when there had been quite a flow of new directors at Augusta, and somehow or another the tax-exempt number had been misplaced and nobody was sure they had even had one. And Ellie Lesser called me to see if Augusta could apply. They were in a bind of time to get grant requests and proposals in, and they needed to have the tax-exempt number. So the Commission on Aging agreed, or the Committee on Aging, I should say, the local group, governing board of the Senior Center, agreed that they could use our tax-exempt number, which I think was helpful. And another thing that the Senior Center did, but that was certainly a two-way street, because we had programs all through the county, and the Augusta Heritage musicians particularly and storytellers were willing to come and perform gratis for the seniors. And that, I think, has, well, that's developed into what they call a Wednesday noon concert, which they, those concerts are advertised in the National Magazine, if you can call the Hillbilly a national magazine.